Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax-deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we're both a little sick today. Yeah. We're spreading our germs across the airwaves.
Forgive us for sniffles.
And sounding like Suzanne Plichette. We design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City via our company, Groundworks. In fact, this week was supposed to sort of be our last week in the field, but Mother Nature had other ideas about, so we're going to work around her schedule and hope for the best. So We Dig Plants brings the culture to horticulture, and today we're going to talk about one of the great plant societies and family of plants, the Gesneriads. I know it sounds like something out of Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
Like a people from an alien planet. So to explain the family, that plant family, and what exactly a Gesneriad is, we have Bruce Boyd with us today. Bruce Boyd is the president of the Greater New York Gesneriad Society. But before we get into that, I think we need to do our horticultural honor roll. Alice?
Hello, hello. Yes. So the horticultural honor roll of the week goes to Elvin McDonald, who is actually the founder of the Gesneriad Society. And more popularly, he is known as the editor, the deputy editor of Better Homes and Gardens magazine. He's a fantastic guy.
And he's alive.
He's alive.
He's not a dead botanist.
No, he has a Facebook fan page.
Yes.
And he is at the Des Moines Botanical Garden, I believe. And he's written several amazing books, so you should look him up and definitely read him and follow him. So what has become the Gesneriad Society began with a story read by a 14-year-old, Elvin McDonald, in November 1949, when he was reading Flower Grower magazine about the florist Gloxinia these flowers, gloxinias, were being bred by Albert Buell in Eastford, Connecticut. In 1951, after he'd had some disappointing results in trying to grow gloxinias in his little lean-to greenhouse on his parents' farm in the panhandle of Oklahoma, Elvin wrote a letter to the editor of Flower Grower asking that anyone interested in forming a society based along the lines of the American Begonia Society should write to him. The request resulted in hundreds of letters.
Can I just interject here for a minute, Alice, as a mother of a 14-year-old, to just say how amazing that is?
Right.
To take it upon himself to write, to want to initiate something like that is extraordinary.
Well,
that's why he's
getting the award, because
yeah.
14 years old, and so it goes on. So one of the letters was a beautician and a passionate gardener, a woman named Peggy Schultz, who lived in Minneapolis. She offered to help in any way she could, and since Peggy was a frequently published writer on the subject of gardening, Elvin invited her to be his co-editor of the new magazine christened The Gloxinian, which was a name inspired by the Begonian. So Peggy remained co-editor through 1961. And among the charter members of the Gesneriad Society and his correspondents at the time a man named Harold Moore Jr., who headed the Bailey Horatorium in Ithaca, New York, Paul Arnold, the founder of Ansco Films, W.W. Coates Jr., the inventor of glass bricks and eventually of the Frito, and a young man from Chicago who founded Midas Muffler.
What, that must have been an interesting board meeting.
I know. Fritos, mufflers, glass bricks.
That's pretty extraordinary.
So by the time he was 16, Elvin was representing the society at various meetings throughout the United States. And by the time he graduated high school, the American Gloxinia Society, by then formally constituted, had over 3,000 members. So today, Elvin McDonald is a botanical educator and an ambassador emeritus for the Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden, among many other fabulous feats.
And well deserving of our horticultural honor roll.
Yes.
Now we have another great horticulturist with us today. Bruce Boyd, as we said, is the president of the Greater New York Gesneriad Society. Bruce is an artist trained at the Rhode Island School of Design, whose art currently focuses on collage and mixed media pieces, as well as painting, nature studies, and watercolor. I'd love to see your work, Bruce. For many years, he was a decorative painter, painting murals, trompe l'oeil, and painted furniture. Raised in rural Maine, Bruce was instilled with a great love of nature, plants, and gardening. He has been a volunteer at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens Education Program, teaching botanical-related subjects to New York City school children. As a result of caring for a neighbor's African violets, he developed an interest in gesneriads. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi, nice to be here.
How are you?
So, good. Bruce, tell our listeners what a gesneriad is, because I bet some of them actually have a gesneriad at home and don't know it.
It's very possible. I didn't know what a gesneriad was when I had my first African violet either, but it is an African violet. It is a member of the gesneriad family. Some of the others are the Floris gloxinia, the Syningia speciosa, and the lipstick plant, which people may have heard of, which is an Ascanthus, has tubular flowers. As a matter of fact, gesneriads tend to have, are tubular. They have fused petals, and usually with five lobes, which look petal-like.
Okay.
And they're zygomorphic, is that the correct term? If you cut them in half, they look, they're a mirror image of each other.
Okay.
And they're very easy to grow, many. They like to live in the same kind of environment that we do. And with a little bit of care, they can be grown with without a lot of difficulty, I find.
Well, that's why we wanted to have you on the show, because I know that I've killed many an African violet.
Not me, actually. You know? I'm really good with African violets.
Oh, well, good.
I finally gave up on them, Bruce, and I decided to try to grow Streptocarpus, which is my favorite, probably gesneriad.
Right.
I love the way that that looks, but they're actually kind of hard to find in the marketplace.
They are, and I love Streptocarpus, too. They're one of my favorites because there's such a variety of flowers, you know, colors and patterns and sizes, and they're very floriferous, and they're very quite easy to grow.
Right.
And,
they don't like a lot of sun in the heat in the summertime, so you have to pull them away from the window. But I find, well, you know, you have to go online. Find these things. I come across them on the farmer's market down at Union Square every now and again.
Yeah, and occasionally as you're trolling around Lowe's or Home Depot, sometimes you randomly find these exotic plants that you don't even find. Because Alice and I deal with so many different nurseries and growers locally, and occasionally they'll get them, but because I think people like me have a hard time growing them, they're afraid, you know, the wholesalers are afraid to sell them, the florists are afraid to sell them to customers because the customer is going to come back with,
oh, I have a brown thumb
died,
and it died.
You know, because you, like you're describing, it's probably not difficult, it's just specific care.
Specific, that's right.
That it requires.
The real growers, I mean the real serious ones, they're not, I'm real.
Right.
And I don't always do this, but they keep, every 6 months, they take a cutting from their streps and to start a new plant. Because they're good for a couple of years. They bloom, you know, very floriferously and plentifully, but they do get tired, so it's good to get a new plant started, which can be fairly simple.
So, Bruce, tell us a little bit about how to care for these plants.
Okay, well, with me, I have a very simple setup. I grow most of my plants on the windowsill, and I do have a number, I do since I have nearly 100 plants. I have quite a few plant stands, and many of the plants are very small because they're not all large in the Gisneriad family, and there are a lot of minis, and I have, as I say, my window faces west, so the light is fairly good, although for the past week or so, it hasn't been so good.
So dark.
So dark. And I have a 10-gallon terrarium, and in that I have, that is lit with a 18-inch fluorescent T8. I think it's only 15 watts, but it's in the window, so it gets a fair amount of light, and the plants in it do very well. But I, first of all, the light is very important, and then they like a fairly humid, a lot of humidity.
Right.
But it's not the end of the world, because I use tofu containers that I set my pots in. The tofu containers and, you know, plastic trays from food packages and so forth that are narrow enough to fit on my windowsill. I fill halfway up with pebbles and water almost to the top, and I keep that moist.
Uh-huh.
And that helps raise the humidity around the plant.
Right.
And I do top watering for most of my plants, and during the summer, when it's humid, they don't need to be watered more than once, maybe checked on in the middle of the week, but once a week, a good soaking.
So, Bruce, I was told, and the success that I've had is always water from the bottom, and you said you water from the top?
I water from the top, and I've had a lot of success. The only thing is, I mean, a lot of members of the Greater New York Gisneriad Society use wick watering, and then they have wicks that come down through the pot into like a plastic pint container that you get at a deli.
Into a source. Into a water source.
Right.
Into a water source, and that way it's slowly watered and kept moist without being soaked.
Right.
Because that's the thing with the top watering. You want to make sure that the water gets drained well out of the plant pot before you set it back in its pebble.
So they should never sit in a puddle of water.
No,
ever.
They don't. The only time you might, if you're traveling, and I had a friend who watered for me while I was traveling, and when I got back, they were all sitting in a lake of water, and they never looked so good in their lives. So,
so all the rules don't really apply.
Right.
So, what do you think the biggest mistake is that? Why do you think people fail with African violets and the Gisneriads? What makes people fail with them?
Well, you know, it could be that they overwater because they don't need to be watered every single day. It could mean that they don't give it quite enough light. And I also, I put a little bit of granule fertilizer in my water every time I water.
What do you use? What fertilizer?
I've used Miracle-Gro for houseplants. Lately, I've been using, actually, Miracle-Gro's orchid fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
Several people who grew African violets had tremendous success with that. I'm having very good success. And I've also used fissure mulching, which I really liked.
I love fissure mulching.
Really just looks so fabulous. The foliage was great, and there was a lot of flowers.
Uh-huh.
I ran out. I haven't been able to, haven't taken the time to obtain another supply.
Yeah.
It smells a little bit in the water, but it doesn't last in the plants.
Right, right. And let's talk for a minute about the light, because they don't really like strong light, but they do need a good constant light source.
They do. The light is important. And
uh-huh.
It's, you know, a lot of our members who live in New York City apartments, you know, find little grow lights that are lights, fluorescent lights that they can just grow two or three plants under without having to do a great big setup.
Uh-huh.
I don't yet, but I'm going to because I want to grow some of the more exotic ones that really do need a lot of light. There are some like Petrocosmias and Apicius that don't want lots and lots of light. If light's too bright, they have beautiful foliage, especially apicius.
Yeah.
Very colorful. And they can become washed out or go back to green, especially the pink ones, if they have too much light.
Uh-huh.
And is the quality of light important? I mean, can people just use any fluorescent light, or does it have to have like one of those full spectrum plant lights? Is that critical as well?
I don't think so. I know that there are a number of our members who grow their plants in their basements with fluorescent lights, and I've got some information here. They use the T8 tubes.
Okay.
And they come in 2, 4, and 6 foot lengths. And depending on how much light they need, they'll use, 2 to 3 to 4 if necessary.
Uh-huh. And how close do the plants have to be to the light fixture? That's an important point,
yes,
too,
it is,
right?
Yes, it is important. It depends on the plant. For example, with syningas, they recommend not any closer than 5 inches, with Calaria, I think you can grow it a little bit. And petrocosmias don't want too much light, so they would be better off, 14 inches below the light.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think you can play around. And some of these plants are really quite cooperative. They can adapt.
Yeah, I mean,
I find,
I have Streptocarpus and Gloxinia and African violets in my east-facing window. I don't have any light set up, and they bloom their little heads off.
They do. I have, I wish east is wonderful because I'm wanting sun, but my apartment faces west, so
yeah.
I don't have the choice.
Yeah.
But they, because in the afternoon, that setting sun can be really hot.
Yeah.
And sometimes my African violet leaves do get burned, I can tell, in the summer.
Yeah.
And they bloom and bloom, and they're so giving, they really. And I have some double ones that are so beautiful with edged in, lavender with white stripes and so forth.
Yeah.
Which are really, and some of them have very pretty foliage too.
And it's such a nice little like vignette to the tropics,
It is. I grew orchids.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I was taking care of this African violet. And orchids bloom once or twice a year for me.
Right.
And suddenly I had this plant that was producing flowers almost continually. Some of the plants do go dormant. I mean, like syningas, the tuberous ones usually have a dormant period. But they're good because then you can start it. It will, if you leave it in the soil and can set it aside somewhere and stop watering it. When it's ready to bloom again or to flower to grow again, it will send up little tiny green shoots.
Uh-huh.
And some of them, my mom has really good luck with African violet. She has had ones for decades, Bruce, and they've gotten huge. How do people deal with dividing them and propagating them? Because I think that's they start out as a cute little thing in a 3 or 4 inch pot.
I know. I've got one.
And then they get massive. So how do you deal with that?
Well, what you can do is you can repot it. You can take take the top off and pot that, because that will start a new one. And the leaves closer to the center tend to produce the best plants for propping.
Okay. Okay.
Leaf prop.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I like putting mine in a closed container with wet sphagnum moss.
Oh.
And, or you can actually just put the plant in a very loose potting mix or a soilless mix of perlite, vermiculite, and a little bit of peat moss.
Yeah.
And put a plastic bag around the leaf until it sends up. And they're very good about sending up little babies.
And
so they reproduce from leaves. I mean, you can literally...
Leaf cuttings, yes.
Leaf cuttings,
actually, mm-hmm,
sticking
mm-hmm.
the stem in the soil or the medium,
yes,
right? So just
you can also cut a leaf in half and put part of it, start two plants, depending on the size of the leaf. If you make sort of a V-shaped cut, it works, but I don't get that far. I usually just take one leaf and do it. With straps, you can do it, because that's a longer strap-shaped leaf,
Right, because I always used root hormone, and I had really... instantaneous success with that.
I've heard that works well, and I used to use that back when I gardened
yeah.
all the time, but I haven't tried it lately, but it's a good idea, and it's probably be very good with streps, because sometimes streps can be a little tricky.
Yeah, yeah. I have a cutting. My African violet is probably a 35-year-old plant, but I have a cutting of it from my mother-in-law.
Aww, yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
So what you're saying to me, Bruce, is while my mother's in Florida, I can go to her house. I can chop the African violet tops off.
Be very careful.
And wait, I just want to be okay with it. So
yeah,
when she
and
comes,
then you put it in your potting mix. But I play around with the leaf first.
Okay, sometimes I don't want to surprise her. Don't worry, it's going to be okay. Bruce said it was fine.
Yeah, I say, Bruce, everybody in the world's going to be suing me. Now let's just do the leaf. And the other thing is that. Sometimes, when they get really big and woody like that, little suckers come on, the stem,
yeah,
and you can cut those off, and those start very easily.
It's good to cut those suckers.
Yeah.
Those suckers, right.
And I have to talk about the leaf. Okay, the leaves, I love the Streptocarpus, but sometimes the leaves get hideous. They get, like, brown edges, spots
they
all
do.
Over them.
Yeah.
Do. What can I do?
It's from watering from the top.
Yeah. Is it, Bruce? I mean, because I love how they look, and then they just quickly go downhill from there. You know?
Right. Well, the leaves can be a bit of a problem, but if you're very, of course, I'm crazy. I take my plants, into all 100 of them, into the kitchen, and I water from, I have a spout, a watering can with a long spout, and I just make sure I don't get any water on them.
Uh-huh.
It takes me quite a long time.
I was going to say, how long is that? Is that like washing your hair?
I set aside an afternoon, a week to do this. But it's my fun, it's my good time.
Yeah.
It's my indoor garden,
Sure.
And but if you watered from the base, you probably would have less likelihood of staining your, damaging your leaf. But they do tend to get brown, and they tend to, as they get older, they sometimes, shrivel up, sort of.
Yeah. And then I start cutting them. And then there's this rosette of flowers and these stumpy leaves on the bottom.
Right.
You're bringing sexy back, Carmen.
Oh, it's not pretty.
You guys, we have to take a bit of a break. Hang on to the line, Bruce. We'll be right back.
We'll do.
You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to Favorite Flower by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
It's always good to have a little ukulele banjo music in the middle of the day.
Good choice, Joe. Really good choice.
Welcome back. We have Bruce Boyd with us from the Greater New York Gisnerian Society, and we are talking about the Gisneriad family of plants.
Which, can I interject here, Alice? There are 150 genera.
Yeah.
And 3,200 species of Gisneriads from both the Old World and the New World, tropics and subtropics.
Yeah, this is a big family.
Big family.
So, Bruce, tell us some of the other plants, and can you describe them for our radio listeners?
Okay, I'll try.
And then we can post photos after the show about some of these types.
Okay, well, first, some of the plants I've had success with in my limited light and so forth and limiting growing conditions are primulinas. And primulinas used to be charitas. And they're small plants for the most part, the ones I've grown. I've grown one called Primulina Rachel, and it has very attractive foliage. It has dark green leaves with a silvery stripe down the middle of the leaf. And the flowers grow on tall, come up on stems and with many, several flowers on each spike,
right,
so to speak. And they're, of course, they're tubular, but they are in different shades of blue, sort of a bluish lavender. And so with the Rachel, there are quite a few flowers, and the flowers last for, you know, a while. And there is a white throat, so to speak, to the flower, but they're very pretty. And then the other one is the Primulina Deco, which has a sort of a marbled pattern leaf that has, it's slightly ruffled, kind of, sort of, and it has slightly larger flowers. And those are also blue lavender. And on the end of the stem, there'll be quite a few flowers, and you'll get quite a few stems. So they bloom quite, you know, well and with quite a few flowers.
Yeah.
And they have a slight yellow to orangey tone in the throat.
Hmm. So how hard are these to grow?
They're very easy. I think they're very easy.
They don't take
too much water. They don't need too much light. You just have to remember to turn your plants every now and again so they don't all get lopsided. You know?
Right. Hmm. And one thing that, you know, even for outside gardeners, Carmen and I sometimes do this, especially with Streptocarpus. We use Streptocarpus as an annual in containers.
It's great.
It makes the flowers bloom and bloom and bloom. And 100. Especially if you're looking for that blue color, which is kind of hard to find, it's a nice thing to work into an annual potted arrangement.
Yeah.
And you grow them outside?
Yeah, in the summer.
Yeah, and then I just dig them up and put them inside for the winter.
Right. Yeah. They make a nice accent.
A shaded area.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Streptocarpella, which I'm guessing is in the Gisneriad, if somebody wants an instant hanging basket.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Instant.
Fantastic.
You know,
I've
just
got
hang
one
them.
Blooming right now.
Yeah, yeah, they're beautiful, and they make literally hundreds of blooms in season.
Yeah.
They do. They're wonderful.
And they're delicate.
And they grow fast with great long hanging branches.
They're tendrils.
Really good.
Right, yeah. Right,
they're handsome.
Right.
The whole plant is handsome, not just the flowers. So I have to ask you, Bruce, okay, what's the holy grail for you? What plant do you want to grow that you can't, that's in the Gisneriad family? I know this is a tough question for the president of the society to admit.
What is it? You know,
I'm putting you on the spot, but...
Well, there are a lot of syningas that I would love to grow that I can't because they need more light than I have available for them.
Uh-huh.
And the syningas, there's a tremendous variety of hybrids.
They're gorgeous.
And they've got wonderful flowers. You know, there's some pink ones that are mottled and speckled and stripes and everything under the sun. And they're just charming. And I wish I could grow those.
And they seem to get tall, right?
Well, you know, if the light is, some do. Some get very tall.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
they do. And in good light, they get tall. But my plants get a little tall sometimes because they're leggy. But I'm happy with them, you know.
Yeah.
I got flowers and I got a healthy-looking plant, but it's just a little leggy.
Yeah.
But, the
syningas, okay.
The syningas get very big. I mean, I could go through my plant book and tell you lots that I would like to grow. Escanthus I have problems with. Some of the columnia I have a hard time because my environment just doesn't have enough humidity or enough sun and what it is that they don't. I get them and they're beautiful, and then little by little they become quite unhappy.
I like the, I might be pronouncing this wrong, Apicius?
Oh, the Apicius, beautiful.
Yeah, those are great.
Those are great, and those, they're tricky because they like to be, in, they seem to do better for me enclosed. You know, I use deli containers and so forth with lids.
Uh-huh.
And they don't need too much light. They
very cute, light, cute foliage.
And they like lots of humidity. And the flowers, it's the foliage that you grow them for, from, you know, most cases, mm-hmm. although they do bloom.
It's variegated foliage.
It's a variegated, and you right. get them in deep purples, pinks, silvery tones.
Yeah.
So they would be good candidates for terrarium then, right, Bruce?
Very good,
okay,
yeah.
So if you're,
yeah.
if you want something... not, you know, something with a little interest in a for a terrarium, something besides right. a fern or a mossy thing, this would be a good counterpart to those, right?
Right, especially the something like Silver Skies that's kind of small. Mm-hmm. I was at the Frelinghuysen Gesneriad Society's flower show last month, and there were some apicius there that were huge with great big rich succulent leaves and those wonderful colors.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never seen anything so large, you know. I was amazed.
And some people grow them as a totem pole, right? Like you can grow them up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's
sort of on
like a wood.
Coconut bark or
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, on like a piece of wood.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, some of these Gesneriads are really epiphytes, and they don't need much soil.
Right,
as long
right.
as there's moisture. Yeah.
And the... Apicius? Is that how you?
Yeah,
Apicius. Okay,
yeah.
Because they're actually runners, right? Like a strawberry.
Yes, they have stolonifers, yeah. stolons,
oh.
and that's how you can start new plants.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you want a larger plant, you can cut your stolons off, and then the main plant gets larger.
Right.
But I find the stolons kind of fun to have those growing them.
Yeah, there was one I was reading about called Chocolate Soldier. That looked really beautiful with chocolate leaf color
yeah,
and
it's
silver.
Yeah, it's a beauty.
Yeah.
And I think that one has a yellow flower. But there's one that does that I've had. And the leaves are so dark they almost look black. And they're
that's very cool.
Yeah, pebbly kind of. You
yeah.
know, and they're really beautiful.
You're ones. Getting me really excited, actually, for houseplants for this winter.
Well, I have to ask you, Bruce, we kind of started with the gloxinias, right?
Right.
And when
mm-hmm.
people, when I think of, like, a floristy plant,
yeah.
something that is has been bred kind of like the Dolly Parton of the...
Yeah.
Of,
right.
That's a good analogy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
First of all, when Allison and I had a store a few years ago, whenever we got those in, they
yeah.
instantly sold.
Yeah.
Instantly because
they're so sexy.
They're huge.
They're yeah. huge and they're very colorful and they're
velvety
charming.
And charming.
Mm-hmm. And they come with variegated leaves
oh,
or mm-hmm. flowers and stripes.
I mean,
stripes
they're otherworldly.
Yeah.
So those are not, those have been bred for those ginormous blooms, right?
Yeah.
Among others.
So, yes, and, but there are actually, they're Syningia speciosa, which is interesting.
That's
know.
What they're actually, they're part of the Syningia
uh-huh,
family,
uh-huh.
a group? Okay, so who tinkered with these genes and made them so large? Do you know?
No, I don't know, to be honest with you.
I'm going
to
look that
it
up.
It was just those hybridizers from that era.
What lonely man.
anyway,
off on his own.
In a greenhouse. It's an Elvin McDonald.
Far, far away.
As a teen.
They were
anyway, we digress.
Plants,
we digress.
Right.
But they are... The thing about them is they come in. They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
Right.
They have to be shipped very carefully, too, because the blooms
oh,
are
yeah.
so big. Now, can those realistically be grown and kept looking that good?
You know, I can't tell you that I know the answer to that. I was told that there are tubers, I
okay.
believe,
yeah.
that are still related to that early one.
Okay.
That, but they're hard to find now.
I bet.
And I don't know where you find them, but I mean...
So now they're probably propagated by cuttings.
Yeah,
right?
Probably.
I would love to see them in their natural
yeah.
state, you know?
Yeah, I would too. I
instead
don't know
of
part of the world
badly,
they come from.
Badly decorated florist pot, you know?
Yes, it's a nice aluminum foil around it.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be amazing just to see like a field rockery of them, you know?
It would. It would be, yes. Well, you know, there are... plant trips, for better word, where people go with various botanical groups, sometimes sponsored by universities, where they go to record, the Gisneriads of a particular area in Central America or in Chile, Uruguay, Brazil, and so forth, and over in China. And because some of these plants, are, you know, the land is being developed and they're losing them.
Yeah.
So,
but you don't have to. You don't have to go far to see exotic plants. We can't. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the society.
Yeah.
A little bit,
right.
Bruce. Tell us about your group.
The Greater
New York one,
chapter.
And tell us about when you meet and all about membership and all that.
Okay, I certainly will. We meet monthly on the third Saturday of the month. We meet at the community center, the Gay and Lesbian Community Center down on 13th Street. And our address there is 208 West 13th Street. It's between 7th and 8th Avenue. There are meeting rooms there, which are available for us to use. And we, sales table, we always have a sales table where people bring in plants that they propagated, cuttings, stem cuttings, leaf cuttings, and so forth. And so you can leave with a Gisneriad. And that opens at 11:45 in the morning. And there is also a little show so people can bring their prize-winning plants in to be judged. That's very interesting and exciting. We have wonderful programs. Some of our upcoming programs are going to be on Streptocarpus. We have Andrew Norris coming up from the Baltimore chapter to talk about insect and problems and plant diseases in April. We have a propagation meeting in March. And we're going to do a Petrocosmia and Primulina meeting with a visitor, Paul Kroll, from upstate New York in May. And on June 21st, Stephen Mavieski from Philadelphia, who has been on many, has put together these trips to China, is going to talk about his second trip to China.
Oh, fine.
So we can, he can bring the exotic Chinese Gisneria
to us. Oh, that's great.
Oh, how great.
So it's a monthly meeting, and is it like the same Monday, the first Monday of the month?
No, it's the third Saturday.
Third Saturday.
Most often it's third Saturday. We have a newsletter, the Glox News, that we send out monthly, and you can get our information on the website at Greater New York Gisneriad Society,
GNYGS.
Right. We'll put a link to it after the show.
Okay.
So people, what does membership cost, Bruce?
You had to ask me that.
I'm sorry.
They're going to really love me. I think it's $20.
Right. I knew it was something small.
It's not very small.
Yeah.
And it's been around for 50 years. They used to meet at the old Hort Society.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I remember.
There used to be 80 members, you know.
Yeah.
Now we have a smaller group, but we have a very wonderful group, a very knowledgeable group, and we have a lot of fun. We have a good time.
Good. Well, we're always looking for new members. There was a gal that maybe you might know her. She worked with us for a short while. Her name was Ellen Okabury. And she was a young woman in her 20s. And part of the reason, other than being whip smart, part of the reason that Alice and I hired her
was because she said
to us
photos.
In the interview, she sent photos of her plant collection.
And she had the same thing, like over 200 plants.
Yeah, 200 house plants.
And we were like, we have to hire this girl.
Yeah.
You know?
She's obviously really passionate. So,
you know,
I should probably attend the Streptocarpus meeting.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you. Please
I'd like
come.
To get some of those gloxinias.
Right. Yeah. There's going to be some strep. The strep meeting is in, January.
Okay.
And it's going to be Bob and Dee Stewart from the New England chapter.
Uh-huh.
And they have greenhouses, and they're very, very knowledgeable people.
Now, let's talk for a few minutes also about the National Gisneriad Society.
Yeah.
And explain to us, to our listeners, Carmen and I have attended these because Carmen and I used to work at the Hort Society of New York.
We've been to many plant meetings.
We know a lot about this, but share with our listeners what it's like to enter a Jusneriad into a show and what the judging is like.
Yeah,
and
that's exciting.
It's so right. fun.
It is. First of all, I since I don't haven't yet, I've had a few big successes, but you know they always. My plants will do their beautiful blooming in between meetings.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It's always that way.
Right. So I do botanical art. So I take my painting of my favorite Jusneriad,
uh-huh.
and I've entered it into the national, the Nationals convention, which is held in early July, usually the week of the 4th. And one year it will be on the East Coast, next year it's on the West Coast. There's 1,300 members of from around the world, and because it used to be much larger. But still, it's great, and it's a lot of fun, and there's so many wonderful people there, and it's very exciting when you enter a plant or, say, it's a painting, a work of art.
Oh, so they judge works of art as well?
They do.
That's
they
great.
Do. The only thing is the plants are much more, you know, the rules for judging the plants are quite specific.
Right.
And with a plant, since it's nature, whereas with the painting, it's more... It's more subjective.
Interpretation, right.
Interpretation, right.
Yeah.
So one person might think your painting is fantastic, another person might. Most of the time I've done pretty well, but I've been very happy anyway. And people seem to like what I was doing. But, you know, I do feel like I'm coming in through the back door.
Yeah.
doing the showings of plants. But
yeah.
anyway, it is very exciting. It's very, very exciting. They have, at the convention, they have all kinds of wonderful programs. They have... You know, botanists from all over everywhere, people from different botanical gardens, people from universities who are doing research with Jusneriad tissue culture and studying the DNA and all of that kind of thing, which they can talk to us about at our level so that we can understand what they're doing and
right.
show us wonderful PowerPoint presentations. There is a plant show there that is unbelievable.
I bet.
A sales table at the show is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, oh, my gosh. It's breathtaking. And there are all kinds of different areas of you know, entries for dish gardens and terrariums and underwater arrangements and things I could never
wow.
think were possible. And and it's just a great lot of fun.
So
and
when
then
is the
there
next...
Is this, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, when is the upcoming show?
That's good you asked me that. It is going to be in July, the first week in July, I think. I know. And it's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh.
So that should be nice and humid.
Yeah.
It should be some nice plants.
The Jusneriads will do very well.
The people won't, but
nothing
well,
a mint julep
sure
can't fix.
That's true.
Right. Last year we met in Toronto. And
oh,
delightful!
Yeah,
delightful. But I've and the year before that, I was out in Seattle for that convention.
Uh-huh.
I got bitten by the bug, and I can't help myself anymore. I go and have a good time.
Well, so, yeah, and it's so tangible, you know.
It's
so Bruce, did you come back? You know, did you have plants like on your lap on the plane, like I do sometimes when I go out to the West Coast?
I have, but actually for Toronto, I went to. I went on traveling through Nova Scotia, so
okay.
I didn't, and they gave me all kinds of plants. They're so nice. There. I mean, plant people are very generous.
So it's not
know.
A cutthroat kind of thing, like you know,
no,
people sabotaging each other's plant display.
Well, you know, there may be a little of that, but I haven't got into that league yet.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time for today, but we really would like to encourage our listeners to join the local Jusneriad Society.
At least go to a
live.
Meeting.
Go to a meeting.
Check it out.
Yes, come to our meetings. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, look online. Look up Jusneriad.
We have a website. And we have a Facebook page. So.
Good.
You want to give the you want to mention those now, Bruce, for everybody listening.
Okay. The website is, Bruce, is G Greater New York Jusneriad Society. Just use the letters.
Okay.
And .org.
Okay.
And there's a link from that to our Facebook.
Okay, great.
And you could even probably do the Greater New York Jusneriad Society Facebook and get the same, you know, get the Facebook because
yeah.
we have lots and lots of pictures from our regular meetings.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us and for, you know, sharing your love and your information on these awesome plants. And
maybe I can learn how to do it.
And you introduced a new Scrabble word to us.
Jizmerian. Yes.
Jizmerian, right.
Thank you, Bruce. It's
delightful. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Okay. So, listeners, keep gardening and visiting nurseries to expand your palate. Thanks to Joe G. for engineering and Jack Inslee for producing. And to today's sponsor, join us on Facebook at Groundworks, Inc. We Dig Plants. Happy gardening.
See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.